Good evening, Mr. Stump. How are you?
Good.
You know, I used to, my first 6 years as an attorney, I spent as a defense lawyer for firms like yours who represented townships as their, when the engineers would get sued for defense. I spent my first 6 years, and then I switched over to doing development work. So I have sort of a unique perspective in this that a lot of people don't. Let's talk about the Mary Beth Backenstein. You picked that as an example of what PennDOT's going to require or not require here, but I think you missed the major issue here. There we have Mary Beth's property. I think it becomes very prominent, if you blow it up as much as you can, there we go, that the property lanes, for the current stack lanes, I call them stack lanes, people call them queue lanes. The queue begin at the new striping for the, that was redone with the sidewalk, and end right there. You can see the white line, which is the back end of the Hershey attraction sign. Number 93, please, which is their T4. Can I see that for a second? You correctly, believe it or not, you did it correctly, identify the fact that from the corner to Mary Beth's driveway, it's 75 feet. And we agree with that. You know, you have in the left turn lane 325 feet. Now, if you look at the queue analysis, which is slide 59, got it? Slide 59.
Mr. Chris, is there a question somewhere in this?
Yes, there is a question coming. You see, they call in front of Mary Beth Backenstein's place. Fishburne, North Wright, 150. So do you agree that 150 is wrong? You have it 75 feet to her driveway, which matches up with the northbound right out of Cherry, because they match to her driveway. Let's go back to the number 60.
Hold on. We have a question here. Let's get an answer first,
all right,
please.
The distance from the stop bar to the end of the white stripe along the left turn lane, approximately 135 feet. I believe in the traffic study they were indicating the existing storage was 150, because realistically there's some length beyond that can still be used as a left turn lane. The PennDOT doesn't define the length of the left turn lane necessarily as the length of that white turn lane. The left turn lane pocket is a little bit different than the way they normally develop them. If you go to the south side on that same exhibit, if you go to the south side of relocated Sand Hill Road, that's normally how they develop left turn lanes. They have, right side of that screen. Yeah, that left turn lane there that's proposed,
yeah,
along Fishburne Road to the right of the screen, yeah.
Back up so we can see the whole screen. Just so we're clear, though, you have it as 325 feet for the left turn lane. That's not what they have now. That's what they extended, right?
Correct. That's what they had said was the proposed left turn lane was 325. But the way that the proposed left turn lane, the turn on to relocated Sand Hill Road, that has kind of an approach taper where the two double yellows flare out apart from one another, and then they call it there's a shifting taper, same thing as an approach taper, and then they have a 75-foot bay taper where they come back together, and that's the point where PennDOT considers a left turn lane to begin. That white line between the left turn lane and the through lane generally does not extend the whole way back to that point. They have it here. They have it shown that way on the concept sketch, but I think when we get to the HOP, they'll wind up shortening the length of that solid white line between those two lanes.
Well, let me ask it this way. We agree that it is 75 feet from the walkway to the start of her driveway. Do you know how far it is then from the total from the walkway to the blue sign that they have for a right turn lane going on Fishburne to Palmyra? Do you know what the existing length of that is right now, as it exists today?
I believe that that's the condition that they're proposing to maintain that white line.
I'm asking, do you know how long it actually is? They claim in their queue lane that it's 150 feet. Do you know what it actually is? Have you measured it? Have you gone out and measured it?
And to the white line, the extent of that hatched area in there is shown as 85 feet.
All right. So, but I'm talking about from the driveway to the sign, which is actually what they actually have for a right turn lane right now. Do you know how much that is from there to the blue sign total? What they've actually got currently for a right turn on Fishburne Road from Fishburne to 322 going to Palmyra?
I'm not understanding what you're saying with the blue sign. What's
all right? Let's do it this way. Go back to 60. The overhead. The blue sign, there. That's what I'm calling the blue sign. That's a directional sign to the Hershey attractions. That's where the white line and the division of the three lanes currently is. Do you know how far it actually is from where that car is that's going to turn right to the blue sign right now?
It looks like it's approximately 150 feet, maybe 140.
No. What if I told you it's only 110? Let's count. I'm going to show you how we're going to do this. Give me slide 55.
You have to let the witness answer. You did ask him a question. You asked him if he agreed with your statement that it's 110 feet.
All right. Mr. May Stump? I have...
hold on. Mr. Stump, do you have any response to that statement that it's 110 feet?
I'm measuring 110 feet from the stop bar to the center of that driveway. I believe that blue sign is another 30 feet or so beyond that point.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chris, you can ask your next question.
Let's go back to 93 again. You just contradicted yourself. From the stop bar you have on your... where is my... I think I'm running out of juice. Is it there? Yeah. You have it to 75. Which is almost to the driveway, right? You're saying it's 85 to the driveway.
I said 110 approximately to the center of the driveway.
Well, if you're 75 to right there, how can that be 110? That little space. That's 30. You're claiming that it's 35 feet from the end of that to the middle of the driveway?
This is labeled here as 75 feet right turn lane. I had measured that at about 85. Again, 75 may have just been a round number. So from this point where that stripe ends to the center of that driveway, what would be the difference then from 85 to 110, approximately 25 feet. I think eyeballing it, that seems to be about, you know, maybe a third of that length.
Let's do it another way. Let's count cars. Give me slide 54, please. Can you blow that up? There we are. There we are in the driveway. This is taken from the driveway. I always use 18 feet per car because the average car is somewhere between 15 and 17, and you got to leave a space between them. So whenever I count cars in a queue, I always use 18 feet. So let's count cars. Where's my... 1, 2, three. There's four cars times 18 is 72 feet. So you get to about 75 feet at the edge of her driveway.
I don't think that's in any way accurate to count 18 feet apart.
Well, I think what are you counting?
On maps or in the field is much more accurate than counting cars.
Well, I will represent to you I did it on the with the tape or electronic and on the ground, and it's 75 feet to the edge of her driveway right there. You disagree with that?
I think I've said it's 110 feet to the center of that driveway from the stop line.
Well, if you've got 110 feet, you should have more than four cars, right?
I think we need to move on. The witness has stated his opinion. He doesn't agree with what you're stating. We've gotten this. I think we need to move on.
Slide 62, please. It is our position that if people are going westbound, they're coming from Palmyra and they're going to come in and go out, that what they're going to do is go down and come out this way. You agree with me, do you not? The only way you can get out of this shopping center, exit-wise, I'm not talking about entrance, but exit, is either southbound here at the right in, right out, if you want to go southbound, or southbound at the full what they call the full motion exit here. If you want to go either north, east, or west, you have to come out of this, do you not, and go either one way. Go up this way or go over this way. Because we keep saying we're not doing the Hope Drive connection right now. So those are the only two ways you're going to go if you want to get out here. So if anybody wants to go west, would you agree with me? They're not going to come out here, go to a stoplight here, go to a stoplight here, and go to a stoplight here. They're going to go this way, correct?
It's safe. They may go the route that you have indicated there in green, which is exiting the south driveway and utilizing relocated fan.
Well, the green is going there. I'm talking about going westbound. Westbound is red. Eastbound is green.
So, in order to get to westbound 322 from the proposed development,
there you got to come out the back. You got to come out,
Mr. Crist. Let the witness answer, please.
There are two ways you could get to westbound 322. You could make a left out of the driveway, out to relocated Sand Hill Road to Fishburne Road, to then turn left onto 322. You could also make a right out of the driveway, utilize Sand Hill Road down to Cherry, and then get to 322 that way. I think either route. Either route may be used. I think the traffic study had assumed 50% of the traffic went one of those routes, 50% used the other route. If they were exiting and going towards westbound 322, they had that split evenly between those two routes. One maybe a little bit more direct. If you're in the shopping center, you may not even know. You can go the other way, get out to Cherry, come back out to 322. I think a lot of motorists may be inclined just to go directly back to 322 and then go on the route. Purely travel time, one route may be slightly better than the other. I'm not sure. I don't know that I've done a count on one or the other, taking into account signal delay and stop sign delay as well as the travel route. But the assumption in the study was that that would be split evenly between the two directions, and we thought that was reasonable.
But they didn't propose any widening of Cherry Drive, did they?
We have asked them, and then they've agreed to do some restriping along Cherry to accommodate longer queues for that left turn, the turn left onto 322. But there is no physical widening proposed along Cherry.
Back over to eastbound. There has been no widening proposed, has there, of the east side of Fishburne, correct? For additional stack lane for...
That's correct. They are lengthening the left turn lane, but not the right turn lane to turn onto 322.
So, how is it that they propose to deal with the additional traffic that's going to be generated that wants to go to Palmyra?
Their capacity analysis showed that the levels of service would generally be maintained before and after development.
Do you have any idea how many additional cars will be going eastbound based upon what their predictions are in the TIS? Have you done any calculation?
Can you give me a moment, I can look it up.
I can save you some time.
I had in the Saturday peak hour, they're distributing 48 trips to that right turn movement, and then 59 in the afternoon peak hour. That's the right turn movement from Fishburne onto eastbound Route 322.
I'm talking about overall, the total number of cars that will be coming out of that in any 24-hour period. That's what I calculated.
I don't know the answer to that. That is our capacity analysis is generally based on peak hour conditions, not 24-hour volumes.
Well, based upon what they had in the TIS, they said that they were going to anticipate it on a daily basis. 768 car. I'm reading what I gave you there. 768 cars in the right only driveway behind the sheets. 1646 coming out of the right in, right out, or the pork chop, if you want to call it that, and 3,000 south. So that would be a total, they call it trips, of 5,486. So you divide that by two and you get cars. So you're looking at approximately 2,743 cars a day coming out of that place. Now, I assumed, there's that word, that 25, you can get southbound, we've said, goes right out of either the pork chop or the southbound edges down without a problem. But if you want to go north, east, or west, one of the other three, you have to come out of the back bottom of it and go either, as we said, to Cherry or this way. That's the only way you got, Fishburne. So I said 25% of that daily cars would be coming eastbound, which would be 686 additional cars from what they've already got. Does that sound about right to you?
I haven't seen this exhibit until now. I can say the 5486 that you have on there does match what's in the traffic study for total external trips on a 24-hour basis. I think the other numbers here, I'm uncertain, if they're accurately distributed between the different driveways or different land uses that had different distributions, it would be tough for me to say whether the other numbers on there are representative. Even if I could, I'm not sure that 24-hour volume tells us much. Again, our capacity analysis and our queuing is based on the peak hour, not the 24-hour. So I'm not sure there's much to garner from the numbers, even if I could validate that they were the accuracy of them.
All right, let's switch gears here. Go back to slide 93, please, which is your identification of the impacts to the neighboring property owners along Fishburne Road.
This is, what exhibit is this?
T3,
T4?
T4.
Okay, thank you.
You included as T5 an excerpt from publication 282 about what PennDOT is required to requires with regard to neighboring property owners, correct?
That's correct.
Are you aware that that current version is just is updated periodically, and that's been the requirement for PennDOT probably going back about 40 years? You've been required to do that?
The law that governs the HOP process has not changed in probably 40 years. So it doesn't surprise me that the interpretations haven't changed drastically and then the process you need to go through. Okay.
May I have slide number 17? Which is the prior version of this. Can you bring it down so we can see at the bottom? I presented this at the Planning Commission in July of 2022. The date on this one is July of 2017. It's essentially the same document that you've attached as T5. I think T5 has two more lines added to it. This has been in existence at least since 2017. You understand what this requires, the chart that you went through. You indicated to me at one time, have you filled out the 950s that requires? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say a 950?
There's a form that PennDOT has, it's the M950R1 form. That is the form that identifies all the property owners that are adjacent to the proposed roadway improvements, and then essentially that's the worksheet that they use to document the results of the that flow chart that I spoke about earlier.
Is that the 950R1 you're referring to?
That's correct.
PennDOT requires each separate property, even if an owner may own two or three adjacent properties, to be separately identified and marked on that form, correct?
That's correct.
The purpose of that is basically to find out how many people are going to agree, how many people are going to be bought off, and how many people are going to sue PennDOT because they issue the HOP and they want to know how many lawsuits are coming. Isn't that really what that form is all about?
I don't think I would put it that way. I think the intent is to ensure that property owners adjacent to the proposed widening are considered and their rights are protected as well.
Are you aware that there were the developer is required to send a letter to each property owner, a copy of the plans, and a letter that PennDOT has prepared? Asking for permission. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about? May I have slide 79, please?
Yep.
Hold on. There's a question there. Once again, Mr. Stump, do you know what he's talking about?
So it does outline the process to approach property owners. Off the top of my head, I don't recall whether it says you must send them X, Y, and Z. I definitely need to engage the property owners. I did talk about doing an appraisal later, and I know that is certainly part of the process that is laid out. I'm looking here through the spreadsheet or through the guidance to see if it's specifically required that you just answer.
Could you give me 79, please? I thought we could all use some humor. Where's 79? There it is. This is the letter that PennDOT requires to be sent to the neighboring property owners by the developer.
That's not quite right. So,
well, it up in the right-hand corner, it references the 950R1 letter that has to go. This is a template called a sample letter template. I just Have you ever sent any of these out?
We have used those letters and approached property owners when we've needed their approval.
It says, and I quote...
Hold on a second. Hold on, Mr. Chris. I'm interested why the witness does not believe this is what you're alleging it is.
So, if we could go back to Township Exhibit 5. You have that?
I don't have that. He doesn't have that.
It's the... That was the flow chart that I reviewed earlier. Perfect. And if you could go down to the second to last page on that, page 7, I guess it would be. At the bottom of that, we talked about once you go through that flow chart, it may say you need to obtain an approval letter or signature on the HOP plan from a property owner, or you may need to obtain an HOP. And I mentioned that there was a third thing you may need, which was right-of-way. If you need right-of-way or you need an HOP, you don't need this. The property owner giving their right-of-way or signing an HOP application essentially implies their consent or approval of the HOP. Right. If you don't need either of those things, then you need to get one of those two things in that blue circle, which is an approval letter, which you provide, which you just showed the sample of, or a signature on the HOP plan that basically indicates that they're aware that these improvements are proposed. So it's one of those two that you could get in that scenario where you have, you know, if you're in that blue circle.
So if, let me make sure I understand you correctly, sir. The sample letter that was shown, that's not a sample letter that the developer sends out to notify. It's a sample letter that the developer is seeking to get the property owner to provide.
Exactly right. That's a sample letter. It's a draft of a letter that they would want the property owner to print and sign in their name that they agree to the improvements that are proposed in front of their driveway.
Okay, thank you. Back to you, Mr. Chris.
Can we go back to the letter? Come back there. My understanding of what I've always done in this process is that you're required as a developer to send to each of the property owners a copy of the plans and a copy of this proposed letter and ask them if they'll sign off the letter. And I just thought we could all use a little levity and humor, because I think whoever drafted this letter for PennDOT missed its calling. Mr. Calling is a comedy writer for Saturday Night Live. Because here's what it says. To whom it may concern, I have reviewed the proposed improvements along my property frontage associated with your development referenced above. I am aware that an auxiliary lane and or other features under the permit will be installed along my property frontage. And you have to specify what you're doing. I am also aware that the proposed improvements located along my property frontage may restrict where a future access be located in or restrict turning movements and future access. With that, I approve your proposed improvements along my property as shown on the plan. Sincerely, property owner. Now, realistically, how many people are going to sign that and send that back to you? You understand where I'm going. Whoever did this, Mr. Calling is a comedy writer. I really.
Mr. Stump, could you answer that question if possible?
I do agree that the language in this sample letter is that does lead people to not want to sign it. It is an uncomfortable situation to go to property owners and say, this is the letter I want you to sign. Realistically, getting an HOP or getting right away from property owners often easier to get than it is to have somebody sign this letter.
Back to number 17, slide 17, please, which is the 2017 version of which we've talked about, and as you have agreed, this has been around, a version of this, for about 40 years. Because I've been doing it, I did this in the mid-80s. You notice that this particular version was done July of 2017, and it's got the same, if you go through it, can you, pages, it's the same thing you had as T5 with, I think T5 added exactly two more lines. Go, keep going. You start the same flow chart and the same requirements of sending everything out to the property owner. Where do we get to the flow chart? There it is. It's the same flow chart. This was done in 2017. Now, you testified in response to questions from Mr. Strong that you did the 2020 Derry Township Hershey Regional Transportation Study in the summer of 2020, correct?
That's correct.
Why did you not mention this in the 2020 study? I mean, it's been required at least since 2017 what you're going to have to notify the property owners, how you're going to have to do this. Isn't that something that should have been included in the 2020 Derry Township transportation study?
No. When you do planning studies, you don't notify property owners of potential right-of-way impacts. You don't even know what those impacts may be at that stage. Plans can design, you cross that bridge generally once you're nearing completion of preliminary design, once you really have an idea of what it is you're planning, how long your turn lane may be. Certainly, I don't remember any case in my years that I've property owners of potential impacts during the completion of a planning study.
So this is not a case where you are deliberately keeping the information away from the public so that they don't get upset ahead of time?
No, that whole study and the plan was presented to the public. The exhibits were presented to the public. There were several public meetings. Nothing was done. None of it was done to hide things from the public. It was very open and transparent.
Let's switch gears again. Let me have slide 91. This is an exhibit that Mr. Nelson made me redact and send him clean copies of. This is the clean copies of the exhibit. Just for the record, so everybody knows what we're looking at here, this is PennDOT's Traffic Engineering Manual, aka Publication 46, correct?
That's
an excerpt from it. Section 4.5, which talks about traffic signal spacing. You'll notice up in the upper right-hand corner a date. It says February. Whoops. Oh, sorry that. February 2012. PennDOT then periodically updates this thing, and when they do, they change the date. Correct?
Yeah, they would change the date as well as some of the content.
All right. So this is the.
Just for the record's sake, this is Exhibit Batch 7.
That date of February 2012 was the date that this was published, correct?
The excerpt that we're looking at, correct.
All right. And are you aware that this has been in continuous existence from February 2012 up through today?
Pub 46 is still used, correct.
All right. There has been no changes to this page since it was published in 2012, correct?
There's a March 2014 version. I'm not sure if this section page has changed, but it looks very similar to the latest standard.
Yeah. I will represent to you that I went online this morning, and you can get it. You understand that this publications, all of the transportation publications that PennDOT has are available to the general public online. All you have to do is put in a Google search for public PennDOT publications. It brings you up a list of all the manuals they have, and you can pick the one and download it. Correct? It's all available.
Yeah, Pub 46 is available.
And PennDOT, to its credit, I'll give its credit, tries to do the plain language law and make it so that the average public reading this can understand what's going on. So since 2012, it has been the requirement of PennDOT that for the there must be at least a quarter mile, 1,320 feet between stoplights on a minor arterial. Correct? That's their recommendation.
What was the number you quoted again there?
1,320, right there.
Correct. That is the, I would say, desired spacing that they have identified there.
Well, what it says, and let me read it out loud.
No, Mr. Chris, you have to let the witness finish his answer. You can't talk over. Do you have anything else to say, Mr. Stone?
They do clarify below that ideally traffic signals would be spaced a half mile apart, and as it should maintain a minimum spacing of one quarter mile.
And again, just for the record, this proposed traffic signal is approximately 603 feet from the traffic signal at the corner of Fishburne and Governor Road, correct? South of it is where you're planning to move it to.
That's correct. And again, I think the reason signalization is even being contemplated is because there's an existing condition, an existing roadway that well exceeds the signal warrants under existing conditions, and they've acknowledged that there's a field constraints don't always allow you to maintain that quarter mile spacing that they prefer, and that's why they typically use the word should to imply things that we'd like to do, but it won't require. They use the word shall typically when it's something that cannot be bent or cannot, there should not be exceptions to. The should is kind of that when you see that should language in most PennDOT documents or other engineering documents, should generally implies that it's a desired condition, but can be adjusted to field conditions. Shall, if the word shall is used again, that's usually a firmer guideline. But I would agree that 1,320 feet between signals would certainly be better.
All right. The last line of the paragraph under the box states there is also some evidence from research that placing more than 3 traffic signals per mile on an arterial increases the traffic accident rate, correct? That's what it says.
Correct.
All right. Well, this is an arterial. Fishburne, we've established that's an arterial, correct?
That's correct.
All right. Let's go to the next page of this exhibit. Here we go. Can you rotate it so that clockwise? One. There we go. All right. Currently, there are stoplights at the corner of at Homestead and Fishburne here. Correct? That stoplight was put in about 2010. In fact, you were instrumental in putting that stoplight in. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think you're maybe signaling the wrong intersection down here.
There it is, right there.
Homestead is signalized, correct.
There is also a stoplight I keep losing my thingy. Am I out of juice? Which one do I push?
The top one.
Top one. Okay. All right. There is also a stoplight at the corner of Fishburne and Cocoa there, is it not?
That's correct.
At the Giant food store?
Yes.
Do you know how far it is from the stoplight at Homestead to the stoplight at Fishburne and Cocoa at the Giant?
Approximately 3,700 feet.
About 0.7 miles, correct?
Yeah.
All right. And you know how far it is from the stoplight at the Giant to the stoplight at 322 in Fishburne?
Approximately 3,000 feet.
So that's about 0.6 miles, correct?
Yes.
So the total mileage between the stoplight there at Fishburne and the stoplight at Homestead all along Fishburne is a total of 1.3 miles. Will you agree with that?
I would agree.
All right. So, and you plan to put the new stoplight right about where the curve, see where the curve is right there? That's about 600 feet, which is just over slightly more than 1/10 of a mile. That's where you're proposing the fourth stop. Now, what would be the fourth stoplight?
I would agree.
So you're going to have four stoplights in a row in, well, 1.2 miles if you go from Homestead to the new stoplight, 1.3 if you go all the way. Does that make sense? Is that safe?
I think the standard that you referenced here is that some data may increase accident rates. Some evidence from research that placing more than 3 traffic signals per mile on an arterial increases the traffic accident rate. I think we just outlined that this would be 4 traffic signals in 1.3 miles, which would not meet that criteria of 4 within a mile.
But there isn't much difference between 1 mile and 1.3 miles, is there?
1,500 feet.
Yeah. All right. Let's switch gears again. Slightly. In preparation for this submission, there is a process by which the developer files for a scoping meeting at PennDOT, correct?
That is part of the HOP process.
And they get a scope review with a scoping number. And they generally have 2 separate numbers, one for scoping and one for HOP, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so the scoping number was 08-2021-0125, the first digits being the month and year that they asked for the scope. So the scoping was originally asked for in August of 2021, correct?
You've analyzed those numbers more than I have. I'm not sure how they derive those numbers.
That's what I see. All right. It's 08-2021-0125 is the scope number.
Okay.
And when you ask for a scoping meeting, what the developer does is they upload their plans to a website, correct?
That's correct.
And then PennDOT hires an outside consultant to review the plans and make recommendations of issues to be identified in the scoping meeting, correct?
Yeah, so part of what's uploaded is a scoping application that identifies what's planned to be studied and the parameters that you're going to use, your trip generation, your distribution, where the traffic's going to go, what study intersections you're going to look at. That's all proposed by the applicant, and then PennDOT reviews it. They generally come to the scoping meeting with their own comments prepared, and they ask that the township and their engineer be invited as well, and they have the opportunity to weigh in on any concerns or discuss the study area and parameters, as well as does the county.
For this scoping meeting, may I have slide 26, please? And for the record, these are pages 739 through 741 of Exhibit A29, which is the full TIS. I've just redacted it. And the scoping meeting was held on October 21st, 2021, correct?
I'm not certain of the date, but that's around the right time frame.
Mr. Chris, what were the pages from the TIS?
739 through 741 of A29.
Thank you.
Which is the TIS.
All right. Yeah, October 21st, 2021 is the date.
All right. I'm not trying to confuse anybody here. I'm trying to put accurate dates on anything. Up in the right-hand corner, you see it says reviewed, prepared and reviewed by. This is how I knew what was going on, because it says PAI. You know what PAI stands for?
The Pannoni Association.
That's their real corporate name. So we knew that Pannoni was involved. A fellow by the name of Jacob Hughes, and we've been through his emails and comments. You were through, you saw when I made, when I cross-examined Mr. Creasy. Do you know Mr. Hughes? Do you know Jake Hughes?
Yeah, I know Jake Hughes.
He's a licensed engineer, reputable fellow, knows what he's talking about.
He is a licensed engineer.
He's out of Dillsburg, Pennsylvania, I believe is his home address, according to the licensing bureau. It says, we've been through this before, that the right-in, right-out along Fishman Road should be eliminated, or at least restricted. He talks specifically about the fact that the driveway will create additional undesirable vehicular points, which will increase the opportunity for crashes and severity of crashes should they occur. Do you agree with that?
I agree that that was his comment. I would also agree that the more accesses you have, the more locations that you could have crashes.
Page, next page of this. Mr. Hughes also says, in no uncertain terms, traffic signal is not desired at the intersection of SR-21, which is another name for Fishburne Road, and relocated Sandhill Road. But no qualification on that, correct?
I think the qualification was due to the signal spacing. I think I've already agreed that it's not desirable to have a signal installed less than a quarter mile from another signal. So yeah, I would agree that Jacob Hughes made that comment, and I would agree it's not desirable. But again, as I've noted earlier, the reason it's being contemplated is because it's helping correct existing deficiencies.
Slide 28, please. You were on the scoping call, right? They call it a team meeting, Microsoft team meeting. I call it a call. But
true.
You participated in that for the township, correct?
I did.
And so did David Habig, who's handing out the documents, correct, for the township? He was on that call?
That's correct.
And also there was Mr. Gates from Lindlow Properties, Mr. Peters, who was the architect, and then there were four people from PennDOT. Eric Kennard, Dean Moles, Bill Warden, and Mazar Malik, correct?
That's correct.
All right. And just so we know who's who, at that time, Mr. Malik was the district permit manager, correct?
That's correct.
And Bill Warden was the district permit supervisor, correct?
That's correct. I'm sorry, Bill Warden?
Yes.
I think he was the assistant district permit manager at that time.
Maybe he got promoted. Dean Knowles is the traffic control specialist, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure his title, but Dean Knowles is involved in every traffic impact study in District 8.
And Eric Kennard is the signal and congestion management supervisor, correct?
He was at that time.
So all these guys are on there. And as soon as that call was done, you fired off an email to Chuck Emmer. And as I noted at the top of this thing, it was on the day of the call at 2:19. You couldn't wait to, it was a few minutes, so it's fresh. And what you said to Chuck Emmerich, and followed up with the notes, is PennDOT made the signal comment just because they want to be on record indicating they don't like it and have some concerns. They acknowledge this signal has been planned for a long time and will begrudgingly accept it with township support. I want to know who of the people at PennDOT thought it was a good idea to ignore the recommendations of their own expert, Mr. Hughes, and their own manual, Pub 46, and say, all right, we'll do it as long as the township wants it. Who at PennDOT said that?
Again, the idea of putting a signal there was kind of maximizing the spacing that we could get from the existing signal and solving an existing deficiency and safety concern. And so it doesn't meet their desirable standards, but they were agreeable. If the township wanted the signal to address that existing concern, to facilitate the signalization.
You didn't answer my question. I asked you who said that they would be willing to look, when I read this, is look the other way and grant it as long as the township wanted it. That's how I'm reading that.
I believe those in the meeting were in agreement. I don't recall which of those individuals said what.
I lost my train of thought here. Let's switch gears again. Are you aware that there's been an agreement between Gary Township and the Hershey Medical Center since about 2010 to fund a portion of a stoplight at relocated Sand Hill Road in Fishburne?
Sorry, can you state that again?
Are you aware that there is an existing agreement since at least about 2010 between the Hershey Medical Center and the township to fund the stoplight at relocations at Sand Hill Road and Fishburne?
I believe I recall some discussions about that, but I don't know any details.
Again, as we noted in the prior exhibit, go back to prior exhibit, Pub 46.
Mr. Chris, I think you need to refer to them as slides because none of them have been offered nor accepted as exhibits nor marked as exhibits. So please refer to them as slides.
I want 91. Top of it. That's been offered as an exhibit. That has been in effect, as we said, since February of 2012. You personally were involved in creating the 2015 322 corridor study, were you not?
I was.
And you were also involved in creating the 2020 Gary Township Transportation Committee study, correct?
That's correct.
And I've read both of those, and the 2015 corridor study was 497 pages. The 2020 Derry Township or Hershey Regional Transportation Study was 1,017 pages. They each had a significant discussion about the relocation of Sand Hill Road and a stoplight at Fishburne Road, but in neither of those documents did I ever see any reference to the fact that it doesn't comport with Section 4.5 of Publication 46. Did you miss that issue when you were preparing those documents?
Signals routinely do not conform to that quarter mile spacing. In fact, just right down the road, there are two signals on 322 in front of the Med Center that are 900 feet apart. We put signals in that are as close as 400 feet apart. So it's not a constraint that raised the level of raising it to the point where we expected that it would be a challenge to get permitted or anything else. Again, dealing with existing conditions, existing roadways. If this were a roadway next to the signal, no other roadway, if Sand Hill didn't exist and we're talking about a new driveway for this development and a new signal, I don't think we'd be talking about a signal. We'd be looking at other alternate access methods that don't include signalization if we couldn't get more than 600 feet of spacing. But I think because we're dealing with an existing roadway that's got real-world constraints, can't always achieve that 1,320 feet. And again, it's something that's very common that you install signals closer than that 1,320.
Well, I wasn't my question. My question is, you didn't mention this or flag this as a potential issue in either the 2015 corridor study or the 2020 Hershey Regional Transportation Study, did you?
That's correct. We do not believe that this criteria was going to create an issue in the permitting.
Let me ask you this. Are you aware that even though this is Fishburne is a PennDOT road, if this signal is issued out, it is issued out and transferred into the name of the township. The township ends up owning it. Are you aware of that?
Correct.
Pardon me?
Just about all traffic signals in Pennsylvania are owned by the township or municipality that they're in.
May I have slide 78, please? No. 70, capital A. In order to get the township, to get this traffic signal here, the township must apply to PennDOT on a form TE-160, correct?
That's correct.
And in order to get the TE-160, PennDOT requires that the township execute what they call a maintenance agreement. It also has indemnity and guarantee provisions, correct? Slide 70C.
They do require them to execute a traffic signal maintenance agreement.
70C. That's the agreement, right? The current version?
That looks like it.
Right. And PennDOT has said, it is what it is. Don't try and change it. You fill it in, you want it. It's been vetted by our PennDOT legal department. It's a take it or leave it deal, correct?
Correct. I haven't seen any instances where they've accepted changes to that form.
All right. Slide 70D. In order to get the traffic signal, you have to execute the agreement. And to do the agreement, PennDOT also requires there be a separate resolution, is there not? This has been since February of 2021. This is when all this went into effect. That you must execute a separate resolution authorizing somebody to sign the agreement and do the maintenance agreement. Are you aware of that?
Yes, that this resolution authorizes someone to sign the sign the overall maintenance agreement, as well as sign future signal applications and plans.
Have you advised the township that they must file this TE-160 and execute this agreement?
It was had previously been executed by the township. The maintenance agreement has been.
For this particular stoplight or a general one that covers all?
Correct. So the idea of the maintenance agreement is that you need to do that one time, have one resolution that then authorizes somebody else at the township level to sign future applications. So in the future, there would need to be the TE-160 form, which you had up briefly. That is this traffic signal application that you'd need for any new signal or any signal modification, but don't need to have a new resolution or a new maintenance agreement.
And the way this works,
Mr. Chris, we're going way into how PennDOT does their procedures. I think we're way off track as to what's going on with this particular application.
No, I'm going to tie it all together, sir.
Well, please do so quickly.
All right. PennDOT, after the 30-day test period, transfers the stoplight into the name of the township, correct? There's a 30-day run-in period, and then they transfer the stoplight into the name of the township, correct?
The it is owned by the township from maybe the contractor has responsibility, but PennDOT, at no point does PennDOT own the traffic signal.
All right. So in other words, you would agree with me that if the township owns the traffic signal and accidents start occurring at that traffic signal, PennDOT's going to be the one, the township's going to be the one to be sued because they own the traffic signal, correct?
People can sue anybody. It could be PennDOT, it could be township, it could be somebody got them wrong.
Well, number 78, please. Slide 78. Page 2 of that, please. You understand, do you not, that the township waives sovereign...
Mr. Chris, the witness is not a lawyer. We understand the law. The law speaks for itself. Can you please move to something that is more germane to this actual application and is more germane to actually Mr. Stump's direct testimony?
With all due respect, I want to make a point here. It states in section 80, what's the number? In that section...
Mr. Christ, you're not a witness. You're not to make a point. You're not to make a statement. The law speaks for itself. Mr. Stump is not an attorney. He can't interpret the law. He's not and has not been admitted as an expert in the law. Please move on.
You would agree with me, though, that as the owner of the stoplight, should the accidents predicted by Jacob Hughes occur, the township's going to get sued, correct?
I don't know.
Well, who else would be sued besides the township? Who else might be sued besides the township?
All right. I'm going to object to that. I mean, what's the relevance of who else?
It is not relevant. Mr. Chris, please move on. Objection upheld.
Do you understand what it means, this proceeding, that this is a public record, right? All the documents here are of public record, and all the testimony is under oath, correct?
Correct.
So if anybody wants to bring a suit against the township for that stoplight and show that the township has knowledge of the dangerous conditions of this area, all they got to do is call up Hughes Albright recording service over here, get a certified copy of the transcript, and all of that will be admissible against the township in any automobile accident cases that might be brought, correct?
He's not an attorney. He's not a judge. Please move on.
Do you, all right, switch gears. Do you participate in the monthly Derry Township Transportation Committee meetings?
We do have a monthly meeting. It's a program management meeting is what we call it.
All right. Is that what they're calling it now, program management meeting?
It's what we called it as long as I've been involved with them, which all right. I'll extend time.
Usually it's on the first Tuesday of the month. Is that correct?
Fourth Tuesday.
Do you attend those regularly?
I do.
And when you're there, do you take notes on your computer of what's going on and what's discussed in those meetings?
I do. I typically have a PDF open that I annotate as we talk about different topics.
So you keep contemporaneous notes of what goes on during those meetings, correct?
Correct.
Who else attends those meetings besides you? Who else is in attendance?
There are typically two members of the board. We have Chuck from Community Development, Chuck Emmerich. We have Tom Clark from Public Works. We have the Chief of Police, typically, or some representative from the Police Department. Chris Christman sometimes attend, other staff from the township sometimes attend, and it's typically me, Brian Hemberg from HRG. I may be forgetting some people, but it's generally to get staff at Derry Township and HRG. Making sure we're keeping them abreast of any design activity we have ongoing, any reviews that we have. And we're discussing anything that's popped up in the last month, any concerns that have been raised at board meetings that we need to look into.
Slide 33, please. Were you in attendance at the meeting held on Friday, June 4th, discussing the Governor Crossing and Hope Drive extension?
I'm not sure if I was there or not. I would guess I was not. I wasn't involved in several of those meetings with the Med Center. But I may have been. I certainly have been on some.
Next page of this. It states, the general consensus is we should prepare a basic design showing the proposed Hope Drive extension connecting directly to Hope Drive. Consensus among whom at that meeting, if you can recall?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I was even at that meeting, but I know that there were discussions about showing a connection that connected all the way to Hope Drive.
Okay. Is that still ongoing, connection to Hope Drive?
Nobody has said we no longer want that connection. I haven't heard anybody ask how can we make that connection happen either in the last at least year, if not longer.
Do you know where it stands at this point?
I believe it's still on the comprehensive plan. It was still in our Greater Hershey study as a future connection, but is not being actively pursued.
All right, I have nothing further.
Mr. Getz, how long are you going to be?
You want to start now?
Well, not if you're not going to finish within the next 5 minutes. Okay, why don't we, we'll stop now then. Mr. Stump, you get to return like a Jeopardy champion. And we will see. I don't have the date. I know we've had scheduled the date.
We do have
May 31st.
May 31st is the next meeting. 6 o'clock in this room. Thank you very much.